continue our study today in 1 Kings. We've been looking in the early chapters of 1 Kings. It feels, at least the chapters we've looked at so far, have dealt mainly with King Solomon. And last time on, and I, Brother John and I, got talking a little bit about some of the prohibitions that King Solomon had ignored, some to more greater extent than others, actually. And what we'll do is maybe we'll start with those prohibitions, because we're going to consider pretty much today Solomon's continuing fall, and at the end of the chapter is his death, actually. So let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 17. Deuteronomy chapter 17, and I guess we'll begin reading in verse 14, and this is a setting of the law back in Deuteronomy, and this is regarding kings. And Deuteronomy 17, verse 14, when you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it, and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses, one from among your brethren you shall set as a king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Now here are the prohibitions set aside for this king, beginning in verse 16. But he shall not multiply horses for himself. So there's the first prohibition, horses. Nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses, for the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, the second prohibition, lest his heart turn away, nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. So as the king, there are three things that they're not to do: multiply horses, multiply wealth, so does the gold and silver, and to multiply wives. Now, let's go over to, again, we're in 1 Kings chapter 10. Let's see, we already covered a lot of this in at the end of chapter 10, but verses 14 through 29 describe a lot of Solomon's wealth. He multiplied gold and silver, and as we read last week, silver became pretty much as the stones of the street in Jerusalem under his reign. Silver was not a big deal. Much gold was accumulated. Much of it was used in the building of the temple, but also it seems like there was just kind of a general accumulation on his part of the wealth. And then we also saw, verse 26 in chapter 10, and Solomon gathered chariots and horsemen. So he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen. So he multiplied greatly the horses in his kingdom too. So far, Solomon's 0 for 2. The two prohibitions that the Lord had given for a king, he has failed both of them, so to speak. And today we'll look at the third prohibition about the multiplication of wives, and we'll see how he does in that regard. So let's begin looking at verse 1 in chapter 11, and verse 1:11. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. For surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. And there's the problem. There's the root of the evil of the many women. Again, for surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to those in love. So he went ahead, again, the third prohibition. He ignored it, and we'll see in the next verse here, he not only ignored it, he ignored it to a huge extent. Verse 3, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. So he had this roughly 1,000 women, between the wives and the concubines. And indeed, they did turn away his heart, turn away his heart from his Lord and God. Verse 4, we'll start seeing again what was going on with Solomon and who he worshipped. Verse 4, for it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the heart to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. So among David, we could go through and we can find things that David did that were not in God's will, but I don't believe we see any evidence that God, or that David ever went after other gods. He stayed true to his God, but Solomon does not. Verse 5, for Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Amorites. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord, as did his father David. Verse 7, Solomon's apostasy continues. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill which is to the east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So here's Solomon building these altars on the description there. The hill that is east of Jerusalem is the Mount of Olives. So he's got these altars that he's built to these foreign the gods that his foreign wives worship. So it is becoming a very, very serious scene of apostasy there. Now, the Lord comes in. He's seen enough in verse 9. So the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. So we reminded that God had appeared twice to Solomon. The first time, you'll recall, was when God came to Solomon and Solomon made the request that he be granted wisdom. The Lord was pleased with that answer from Solomon. The second time the Lord came to Solomon was after the completion of the temple in Jerusalem. Again, this was a positive time for Solomon and God. Things had gone well with the construction of the temple. But now, in this third time, verse 9, so the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods, but he did not keep what the Lord had commanded. Therefore, the Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this and have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant. Nevertheless, I will not do it in your days, for the sake of your father David, but I will tear it out of the hand of your son. However, I will not tear away the whole kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of my servant David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen." So the third time that God comes to Solomon, he tells him, this is enough. You know, you've turned away from me. The kingdom will be taken from you. And in those verses there, the Lord indicates that the kingdom will be divided. A small part will be left to Solomon's son. But we'll, as we read the chapter, we'll see that 10 tribes are to go with the northern kingdom, and only two will stay with Solomon's son. Now, the rest of the chapter pretty much deals with the adversaries that now are against Solomon. And, you know, you remember the earlier chapters we looked at, There were very little, if any, mention of adversaries. Things were going well for Solomon. He early on got rid of some of the enemies that had infiltrated through David's reign, and things had gone quite well for Solomon. At least on the surface of things, it looked like things were going well. Now the seeds had been set for his destruction. So now we'll consider some of the adversaries that will come up against Solomon at this point, and I think the whole chapter that chapter is interesting. So we may read a good part of it, but let's start in verse 14. Again, these are the adversaries that are coming up. "Now the Lord raised up an adversary against Solomon, Hadad, the Edomite. He was a descendant of the king in Edom. For it happened when David was in Edom, and Joab the commander of the army had gone up to bury the slain, after he had killed every male in Edom, because for 6 months Joab remained there with all Israel until he had cut down every male in Edom, that Hadad fled to go to Egypt, he and certain Edomites of his father's servants with him. Hadad was still a little child." So this gives the kind of the history of where Hadad is. And it's interesting, the first two adversaries that we'll look at, they were actually adversaries that were created through David, Solomon's father. You know, and as you think of David, he was a man of war, and a man of war would have in a lot of cases would have created a lot of enemies. So these are kind of two of the enemies we'll look at that were created through King David that are now coming back and resting their violence or whatever against David's son. Now we'll continue in verse 18. "Then they arose from Midian and came to Paran, and they took men with them from Paran and came to Egypt, to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, who gave him a house, apportioned food for him, and gave him land." So Hadad's doing real well when he goes down to Egypt. The Pharaoh has favor on him. 19, "And Hadad found great favor in the sight of Pharaoh, so that he gave him as wife the sister of his own wife, that is, the sister of Queen Tahpenes. Then the sister of Tahpenes bore him Genubath, his son, who Tahpenes weaned in Pharaoh's house, and Genubath was in Pharaoh's household among the sons of Pharaoh." So, you know, a very favored position that this Hadad is, you know, he's given a wife, and the child is the child is raised in the hall of the household of the Pharaoh. Verse 21, "Now when Hadad heard in Egypt that David rested with his fathers and that Joab, the commander of the army, was dead, Hadad said to Pharaoh, 'Let me depart that I may go to my own country.' Then Pharaoh said to him, 'But what have you lacked with me that suddenly you seek to go to your own country?' So he answered, 'Nothing, but do let me go anyway.' And God raised, okay, that's, again, that would be the end of talking about the adversary that was raised up from the south, Hadad. You know, I was thinking about this, and I think it was Brother Mike a while back showed us some things about some of these places in the Old Testament. And it seems as though nothing good ever comes out of Egypt, you know? And, you know, that goes down to today. You know, just look at the trouble Egypt has been, continues to be. If you follow politics today, you see this Muslim Brotherhood taking over Egypt, and boy, is that going to be a problem for Israel? Certainly seems to be. Don't see much good coming out of Egypt even today. But it's been a long, long, sad history with that country, and we trace it back to these things that happened 2,500, 3,000 years ago, and still a problem continuing down to this day. All right, so that is Hadad in the south, one of the adversaries that comes up against Solomon. Verse 23 will be introduced to a second adversary, again, one that was a result of actions that Solomon's father David had taken. 23, and God raised up another adversary against him, Rezon, the son of Elodad, who had fled from his lord, Hadazer, king of Zobah. So he gathered men to him and became captain over a band of raiders when David killed those of Zobah. So again, David's involved in this. And they went to Damascus and dwelt there and reigned in Damascus. He was an adversary of Israel all the days of Solomon, besides the trouble that Hadad caused, and he abhorred Israel and reigned over Syria. So we have two enemies that again are against Solomon. These two were kind of generated through actions that Solomon's father David had taken. Then we get to Jeroboam. Jeroboam is kind of is uniquely Solomon's creation as far as the problem that Jeroboam brings. And we'll read here and see what the situation is with Jeroboam. Then Solomon's servant, Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, an Ephraimite from Zereda, whose mother's name was Zeruah, a widow, also rebelled against the king. And this is what caused him to rebel against the king. Solomon had built the Milo and repaired the damages to the city of David his father. The man, Jeroboam, was a mighty man of valor, and Solomon, seeing that the young man was industrious, made him the officer over all the labor force of the house of Joseph. So we see that as Solomon was rebuilding the city, that he put this Jeroboam in a position of authority. He was in charge of rebuilding the Milo. We don't have a great description of what the Milo was, but it was, again, some type of structure that was finished and built in Jerusalem as the temple was being completed. But anyhow, this Jeroboam had been made a captain of that project. So we don't know precisely what happened there. Maybe the power went to his head and thought he should have more power as King Solomon took over. Now, we will look at a prophecy, and this is a prophecy concerning the division of the kingdom, and we'll begin that in verse 29. Now, it happened at that time when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem that the prophet Ahijah the Shilonite met him on the way, and he had clothed himself with a new garment, and the two were alone in the field. Then Ahijah took hold of the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. Then he said to Jeroboam, "Take for yourself 10 pieces, for thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and will give 10 tribes to you." So again, the illustration there is the prophet tears his garment into 12 pieces, representing the 12 tribes of Israel at that time, and he gives 10 of them to to Jeroboam. We'll continue in verse 32. But he said, "But he shall have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, and for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, because they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the people of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do what is right in my eyes, and kept my statutes and my judgments, as did his father David." Again, the Lord refers back to the faithful David. Verse 34, "However, I will not take the whole kingdom out of his hand, because I have made him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of my servant David, whom I chose because he kept my commandments and my statutes. But I will take the kingdom out of his son's hand and give it to you, 10 tribes. And to his son I will give one tribe, that my servant David may always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen for myself to put my name there. So I will take you, and you shall reign over all your heart's desires, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it shall be, if you heed all that I command you, walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build for you an enduring house, as I built for David, and will give Israel to you." So there's quite a promise made here to Jeroboam. He's given these 10 tribes, and if he's faithful and faithful to the Lord will bless him there. Verse 39, "And I will afflict the descendants of David because of this, but not forever." So Solomon at some point gets word of what's going on here. In verse 40, "Solomon therefore sought to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam arose and fled to Egypt, to Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon." So it's interesting that what Solomon's reaction here is. He's not repentant, but yet he wants to go ahead and kill this one who's going to be the king, in effect, in his place, at least with respect to the northern tribes. And when you think back and you think of what happened between Saul and David, we saw a similar situation there, that Saul knew that David was going to become king, and he tried his best to do away with David before that happened, and it failed also, and this fails here too. You know, one other point is God had promised all this to Jeroboam, but it looks like Jeroboam once again became impatient and probably tried to take over these 10 tribes while Solomon was still alive, but ended up going down into Egypt and then waiting until Solomon was dead. So finishing up with Solomon, verse 41, "Now the rest of the acts of Solomon, all that he did and his wisdom, are they not written in the book of the acts of Solomon? And the period that Solomon reigned in Jerusalem over all Israel was 40 years." So he had a 40-year reign in Israel. "Then Solomon rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father. And Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place. So we see kind of the sad history of King Solomon, one who started out well and ended poorly, forsaking his God, going after his own heart's desires for the riches, for the horses, for the other women. And you see what that ended up doing for Solomon. The kingdom was taken away from him because of his rejection of God and his acceptance of these foreign women's gods. So that's the sad story of King Solomon. At this point, the Israel nation has been divided into two tribes. We have the northern tribe and Israel. We have the southern tribe, Judah. So we will spend the next bit of our time looking at this divided kingdom. And I looked yesterday and I found a chart that I think is fairly good, and I'll pass that out the next time. It's got the divisions between the two kingdoms and the leaders, and then it also has kind of superimposed on those the effect of the prophets as we go through that. So you've probably all seen these things. This one just kind of struck me as being pretty good. You might have one that you like better, and that's fine too, but I'll pass that out next week as we start looking at the two kingdoms now that Israel has become. So that is it for today, and I will turn the rest of our time over to Brother Haley. Thank you.